Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Heritage Connection, brought to you by the folks here at the Tower Heritage Center, home of the Washington County Historical Society in Washington County, Wisconsin. Our mission is to forge meaningful connections across generations to Washington County's hardworking legacy, and this podcast is one more way we're trying to make those connections. I'm your host, Justin Agar Pratt, and I'm joined by my co-host, Bella Bussey. Bella, how are you today?
Doing well. Excited to be here for another week.
Yeah, same. I've been enjoying these conversations, and I'm looking forward to today's as well. Mm-hmm. So today, we are continuing our new feature series around the county, where we spotlight various historical organizations around Washington County, Wisconsin. Last week, we talked to Jim Dix and Mary Herrick from the Germantown Historical Society. And this week, we have Dawn Bondas Miller of the Wisconsin Automotive Museum in Hartford, Wisconsin. Dawn, thanks for joining us on the Heritage Connection.
Oh, you're very welcome. Happy to be here.
Yeah.
Would you like to start by sharing with us your respective role at the Auto Museum and then a little bit about the responsibilities you have?
Sure. I'm the executive director of the Wisconsin Automotive Museum, and it's a small facility, so that means there's a lot of other things that I do as well, you know, with helping with maintenance and such. Mm-hmm. So it's a wide-ranging position, so curatorial, cleaning, front desk admissions.
All the things.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Can you give us an overview of the museum? Its mission, and I guess what sets it apart from other auto museums. And I know sometimes organizations kind of use the term museum loosely with mm-hmm. their collection of cars. Mm-hmm. So any of those things, wherever you want to start.
Right. Well, the Wisconsin Automotive Museum is quite large. It's on two floors with over an acre of exhibit space. There are 126 vehicles there currently. And the mission is showcasing transportation history. So that lets us include a very wide range of vehicles. Mm-hmm. It also ties right in with the 1913-1003 Soo Line steam locomotive. And of course, when Kissel was made in Hartford, we are heavy on Kissels. We are heavy on Wisconsin-built cars, being the Wisconsin Automotive Museum. And it's the place where you will see more Kissels than anywhere else in the world. We have 28 on exhibit right now, including a Kissel pedal car. Actually, it's 29 if you count. It's a real Kissel pedal car. So that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Very cool. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how the Automotive Museum came about and what kind of motivated its establishment?
The idea of a museum had been around for quite a while. Kissel was manufactured for 25 years, which is a significant amount of time, but the 25 years were 1906 to 1931, so it's been out of production for a bit too. Mm-hmm. But back in 1971, there was the first Kissel homecoming where they were bringing Kissel owners and their vehicles back. And I think that really got things going. I think, you know, with the bicentennial that came up in 76, people were thinking about a lot of history and heritage related mm-hmm. Organizations. In the early 1980s, the Seneca Cannery in Hartford closed. They tried to sell the building, were not successful, and they chose to donate it to the organization that was trying to get the museum going. And it was the building and the site. And it took a couple of years to get even part of the building so that the museum, you know, the beginnings of the museum could be exhibited. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so obviously, you know, the Kissel automobile, as you've shared with us, holds a special place in the museum's collection and its history. Mm-hmm. Can you share a little bit more about the significance of Kissel automobiles when you look at Wisconsin's automotive history and maybe some of the unique features of the vehicles?
Well, with Kissel was known for being a high-end car. They were in it from the beginning to build a high-quality car. It's just like manufacturers now. Some are in it for performance and quality, mm-hmm. and some are in it to, you know, be more affordable for, you know, a wide mass of people. Kissel was not the most expensive car that was out there, but they were winning hill climb contests. They were winning endurance contests. So I think that appealed to a lot of people, including movie stars.
Yeah.
The Kissel Speedster was the best known, that had the nickname of the Gold Bug. Mm-hmm. And that was introduced in the late 19-teens.
And speaking of the gold bug, which is, you know, Kissel's most iconic car, and you said that, you know, a lot of movie stars, celebrities were into it. Do you want to share any interesting stories, you know, that are associated with celebrity owners?
Yeah, there's a lot of names that folks recognize. Amelia Earhart owned a Speedster. Her Speedster still exists at the Forney Museum in Colorado. Greta Garbo, Douglas Fairbanks, Mary Pickford, and the illustrator James Montgomery Flagg. And if that name's not familiar to you, he is the illustrator who did the famous Uncle Sam illustration around the time of World War One, the I Want You for the U.S. Army. He had a number of Speedsters, and in our archives, we have a copy of a letter that he wrote indicating what he wanted his next Speedster to look like, and it indicated that he had included a sketch. We don't have the sketch, but in the description, he wanted an ivory body, fuchsia fenders, and a green interior.
Wow.
It would have been fun to see that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
And one of the things Kissel was known for, they had their standard colors, but you could get any color you wanted in a Kissel. There was an upcharge. It was in the early years an extra $50. Later on, it was an extra $100. And we do have documentation that someone got a pistachio and lilac Kissel.
Oh, wow.
A purple and green Kissel.
Oh, man.
That's really
so
cool.
There's really no wrong color for a Kissel. Yeah. But they did have their standard colors, just like cars now have standard colors.
Right, sure, but you can customize. That's really cool.
Yes.
It's interesting that you bring up Amelia Earhart, because this is kind of dating when we're recording this episode, but just like yesterday I saw a story about, like, they think maybe they found her plane, or there are some images that have surfaced from this ocean exploration company that they think maybe they found it. It sounds like her Kissel is a lot in better condition than her plane probably is right now.
Yes.
That's so cool that they have her car. I mean, among all of those celebrities that you listed. Now, it's not just Kissels that you have at the museum. You've got really a diverse and impressive collection of vehicles. What's the approach of curating that varied assortment? And are there any particular vehicles that hold significance for you personally right now? Because I know they're not all there forever. So, you know.
Yeah, the museum's about a 50-50 split, cars that have been donated to the museum that we own and ones that are on loan. And they range in age from 1902, but we do go into the 1990s. And like I mentioned before, we're obviously heavy on Wisconsin-built cars, being the Wisconsin Automotive Museum. But there are over 35 different marks or makes of vehicle available. So I think it really appeals to a broad population. If you're into muscle cars, no, we're not all muscle cars, but we definitely have cars that fit that bill. And we have race cars. We have, you know, other antique cars, you know, the age of the Kissels. So I think it's trying to, you know, the exhibits do change, and I think it appeals to, you know, a broad population.
This might be a silly question, but are any of them functional? Like, can they still turn on and...
Oh, yes.
Okay.
when they're there for exhibit, there's no fuel, no batteries, no keys in any of them. Most of them will run, but there are some that are unrestored.
Gotcha.
The unrestored vehicles are really getting more respect, I would say, in the last 10 years or so. There's more interest in them, and I look at them as like a primary document, because if you're restoring a car, you know, they are only original once. And there was a gentleman who was restoring a 1923 Kissel Phaeton a few years ago, and I was able to get a measurement off another Kissel of that vintage that had intact mud flaps, and get the measurement from the bottom of the mud flap to the floor. So that's geeky history car stuff. But the owner was very appreciative that I was able to get measurements and photos. And like I said, the survivor vehicles are really having a lot more respect.
You mentioned, you know, just talking about the unrestored vehicles, you know, getting more respect now. I know in film, there's a fine line between over-restoring a film, right? And you know, where an old film will go through the restoration process, and all of a sudden it's never looked better, but it like the audiences in 1950 or 1933 wouldn't recognize that film. Is there the same concern with cars? Can they be over restored even if someone's trying to stay accurate?
Right. Sometimes they can be over restored, and it's when someone owns a car, it's their car, they get to do what they want to do with it. But there are times that people put clear coat on when it wasn't available, but it's done to protect the car. There are other times where sometimes people put chrome on a car that actually would have been nickel, and a lot of people wouldn't notice that, but then it's probably a little, it's shinier than it would have actually been. So there's some of that, but it's one of the things that is interesting, kind of going back to one of your previous questions. It seems like there's not a lot that changes with new ideas for cars, but the technology changes. Electric cars have been around for well over 100 years. Some people think that they're new. Things like front wheel drive, in modern day manual transmissions, there aren't as many of those out there, but modern ones have a driver's assist that will hold the vehicle on a hill and make it easier to start from an angle, less likely to kill the car.
I have one of those, and mine doesn't have hill assist.
Okay, but the thing is, the hill assist, Studebaker had that in 1950.
Really?
Right. So where did it go in the meantime?
Right.
I don't know, but I just thought that was because I didn't have that when I was learning how to drive a manual either. And I've driven a car with that driver's assist, and this is kind of nice.
Right.
And other things too. There's, I think it's one of the modern trucks is bragging about, they've got seats that lay down completely flat, like a driver's seat. Nash was doing that over 70 years ago.
Right.
So, like I said, the technology changes, but those basic ideas, most of them have been around for a while.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, things kind of keep coming around, you know.
Like trends, they just kind of cycle.
Well, and even like colors. You look at the mid-1920s with the Kissels, those dark blues and those dark greens were very popular colors. And that was whether it was Kissel, whether it was Nash, any of them. And you get into the very late 20s, early 30s, you see the tans being a popular color. And back in the late 1980s, early 1990s, those colors were back in style. So it is like the pendulum swings back and forth to some degree.
I love that orange Kissel.
The enclosed speedster, the 1925.
That's a great, I mean, that whole row of colors that those immediate vehicles around it too. It's great to see that variety.
So it's also interesting to me that the museum hosts spaces for the Nash Car Club of America, the Hudson Essex Terraplane Historical Society, and the Southeastern Wisconsin Short Track Hall of Fame. How did these partnerships come about, and what do they bring to the museum experience?
Well, I think all of them bring a broader experience in representing automotive history in all aspects in Wisconsin. The Nash Car Club of America got started in around 1970. And Kissel was the second longest lived auto manufacturer in Wisconsin. Nash slash AMC was the longest. So that's a really good, a really good fit. So we do, we have dedicated space for Nash in there. And then more car history. American Motors formed when Nash and Hudson merged. And for the last 3 years of Hudson's production, that was all taking place in Wisconsin. So even though it was brief, Hudsons were made in Wisconsin at the end of their run and merged with a Wisconsin manufacturer. So that's another natural fit. And then with the Southeast Wisconsin Short Track Hall of Fame, they were getting that organization going 2006, 2007, and Southeast Wisconsin has a rich short track racing history, and with a lot of people who are well known in NASCAR now, and there's a track right over in Slinger.
In Slinger, yep.
Right. Yeah. So and Matt Kenseth, Dick Trickle, Alan Kulwicki, all have ties, and we've had cars on and off from all of them exhibited at the museum. So
all of
those are just really really good fits.
Yeah, for sure.
Through the years.
Before we move on, I think maybe I mentioned this question before, but it was tied in with another one.
Sure.
Do you have a personal favorite right now? Or is there one that maybe is no longer with the museum that you just, that tugs at your heartstrings and that you miss?
I can't pick just one because there's great aspects about all of them.
Sure,
but
sure.
one of the favorites that we had a few years ago was a Ruxton. Mm-hmm. And that car was an early front-wheel drive car. It was competing with the Cordell 29. And it was, the thing was, Kissel helped make that car. And it's incredibly rare. Everybody knows about Tucker and the movie. Well, there's only 19 Ruxtons that exist.
Really?
There were only 96 that were made.
Wow.
10 are owned by one individual. So it's really hard to get one on loan. It was just thrilling to have one on loan.
Yeah.
And it was innovative for the time. It mm-hmm. was, it didn't have running boards because it was so much lower than the cars of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that we had was the last one believed to be made.
Wow, last one off the line.
Right.
Huh?
Yeah. So that was a big thrill. Beautiful, beautiful car.
Yeah.
Beautiful car.
That sounds like it.
I'd love to have that one back.
Yeah.
But
well,
I mean, it was nice, not just that it was rare,
yeah.
but that Kissel was making the transmissions and the open cars.
Okay.
That car was not made in Hartford, but there are 3 Ruxtons left that were made in the Kissel plant in Hartford.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
And 2 of them were the personal cars of Will Kissel and George Kissel, who were the co-founders of the automobile company.
Got it. Well, Ruxton owners out there, if you're listening.
Right.
Hint, hint.
Call me.
Yeah. Okay, well, shifting gears, pun intended, the museum is also home to the 1913 number 1003 Soo Line steam locomotive, which you mm-hmm. mentioned kind of at the top of the show. How did the museum become home to the train, and what part does it play in telling the story of transportation history?
Mm-hmm. Well, the 1003 has out-of-state owners. There is a separate nonprofit that operates the 1003 when it goes out, like for Hartford's Christmas parade, but they had restored the 1003, and oddly enough, there are not a lot of places that can accommodate a full-sized locomotive.
Oh, imagine that.
Right. So they had been, you know, looking for a place where it could be housed, and they came across the museum. And the reason the museum has space for it is because of the canning factory history,
mm-hmm.
that there was the short siding, you know, to unload empty cans, etc., and then to load out product when
mm-hmm.
it was done. So that, again, it was a good fit. It was not midway, but between where the out-of-state owners lived.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as, you know, tying it in, you know, it is part of transportation history. And the Kissels, which were made just down the way from the museum,
mm-hmm.
most of those, they were transported out of Hartford on the railroad.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, a little bit of a personal connection, and I guess professional connection for me. Our listeners may not know, I worked for Dawn at the Auto Museum for mm-hmm. a few years when I was first getting started in the museum, my museum career. And one of my favorite things about greeting guests to the museum is letting them know, you know, giving them the spiel and then letting them know, oh, and when you're on the second floor, don't forget to stop out and see the locomotive. And sometimes they didn't really think anything of it or whatever, but quite often, and I know you get this all the time, Dawn, mm-hmm. they look at you, there's a locomotive on the second floor? How did you get that up there? Do you want to share the secret behind the scenes, Dawn?
Sure.
For maybe folks who haven't been or right. maybe they're still wondering?
Right. There's no magic involved. The building, we're in the newer part of the building, which dates back to the 1940s, but the whole building is built into the side of a hill. So if you've been to the museum, Rural Street goes up fairly sharply
mm-hmm.
when you get to the railroad tracks. So it's not on the second floor, per se.
Right.
You access it from the second floor.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No pulley system.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So, how does the Wisconsin Automotive Museum engage with local community and automotive enthusiasts? Are there any events or showcases that you'd like to let our listeners know about?
One of the things that just started last year is on Thursday nights, there's a casual cruise-in that takes place in the museum lot. And you never know what you're going to see there. There's, you know, every day, you know, more everyday run-of-the-mill cars, but, you know, you might see, you know, DeLorean or, you know, any other number of vehicles there. And great gathering time and place for people. It also tied in well with the Shower Arts Center Courtyard Music Series that mm-hmm. runs June, July, and August. So the music was going on. They have a food truck over there. So there was really something for everyone on those Thursday nights. And as far as starting, the cars will probably start whenever the weather gets nice. And that might be in April, but probably in May. And just like in the fall, that ran through September and into October. So just depends on what, you know, what the weather was like. There are a lot of car groups and car clubs that come and visit the museum. So it's kind of, sometimes it's kind of like an unplanned car show mm-hmm. that's out in the lot when they, if they all drive their vintage vehicles. Mm-hmm. And another good time to come to Hartford overall too is when the downtown has their annual car show, and that's the third Saturday in May. Mm. And there's usually some other cars that wind up in the museum lot. We've got a Chevy truck show. It's a ways away, but on August 17th. So that's always a nice one. There's a National Packard group that is coming in June as well. So
okay.
there are local chapters and clubs that come to the museum every year, but then there's often some of the national groups when they get together in Wisconsin or even Northern Illinois where they make a trip up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Now, as I'm sure our listeners can imagine, preserving and of course showcasing all of this automotive history is a pretty significant undertaking. What are the steps that you take to ensure the preservation, not only of the vehicles, but there's all sorts of different artifacts there mm-hmm. that are related to transportation history. Mm-hmm. What are the steps involved and how can individuals best support the museum and your mission?
Well, with the vehicles, we do our best to, you know, we keep air in the tires, we get the gasoline out of them. You know, we do monitor, you know, any other leaking that's going on. We keep humidity under control. We have supplemental dehumidifiers. We try to, you know, watch out for any moths or any other pests that are there. So, you know, we take care of that. Just come and visit the museum. We are a 501c3. You know, any donations are appreciated, but mm-hmm. and if you think that, you know, you've been to the museum once and it's one and done, mm-hmm. it does change every year. Mm-hmm. I always tell people that, you know, even if you were here just a year ago, I guarantee you're going to see some other, not only cars, but there are other exhibit items that are going out. We've updated a Kissel timeline that's just gone up. We've got some Sanborn fire maps that we have on exhibit now that really show how the Kissel factory just absolutely exploded in size, going from 1907 to 1913 to 1918. So mm-hmm. there's a lot to see. And even if you've been there once, most people don't have a photographic memory. You'll probably notice something that's new to you, mm-hmm. even if it was there the mm-hmm. last time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely worth multiple visits a year.
Right.
It's definitely worth a visit mm-hmm. and a trip. It's really spectacular.
Last year we had visitors from 24 foreign countries and from 46 states.
Wow.
So
quite
there's
a draw.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So people come back, and one of the visitors we had was from Germany, and it was his third time
really?
To the museum.
Wow.
Yes. He was there late in the year.
Okay.
And the very first visitor this year was from Switzerland, and he was a Chevrolet historian.
Wow.
First person
that
through the door
cool.
the first day we were open this year. So that was exciting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is amazing. What a big draw.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if people can hop on a plane and fly across the ocean, listeners out there, if you're local to Washington County, you can hop in your car and drive the 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever. The drive is worth it, for sure.
Thank you.
So, yeah. Well, Dawn, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for your visit, for sharing about yourself and the museum. Now, for listeners, there is a blog post on our blog called The Tower Chronicle about the Kissel Car Company. So if you'd like to learn more about the history of that company, be sure to check that out. We'll include a link in the show notes, as well as links to the Wisconsin Automotive Museum's website and Facebook page. And to members of other historical organizations in Washington County, Wisconsin, if you'd like to be featured on our podcast, let us know. We'd love to have you on our list of guests. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to this week's episode of The Heritage Connection, brought to you by the Tower Heritage Center, home of the Washington County Historical Society, whose mission is to forge meaningful connections across generations to Washington County's hardworking legacy. See you next time.